listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. This is Ed McGrogan here with the Tennis in 10 podcast. And we're going to go a little longer than 10 minutes today, extended version for a couple of reasons. First, I did want to atone for two missed podcasts earlier this week. So that's, you know, we can add on another 20 minutes if we decide it's warranted. And, you know, it very well may be because we have no tennis tomorrow on the middle Sunday. So maybe a little longer podcast to make up for that. And we have, you know, obviously a bit to go over with the first week of play complete, the first three rounds of play complete, no significant weather interruptions. There was only brief rain earlier in the week, I believe on Tuesday, giving us the, you know, much anticipated so-called manic Monday with all 16 fourth round matches between both the men's and women's singles draws. And the order play just came out, and that's another reason why, you know, I think we could go, you know, we have quite a bit to discuss. One thing I wanted to start off with, and I would encourage you all to participate in, is to go to my Twitter account, that's at Ed McGrogan, and look over the order of play, and I put up a poll that asks which of the top three show courts, center, number one, or number two, would you prefer to have, would you most want to have a ticket for on Monday? And I think it's a pretty tough call depending on, you know what you fancy in terms of specific players, the tours, the matchups themselves. So I want to run those down to start, and then we can dig into, you know, to my thoughts on those matches. We start at center, and I saw a tweet earlier today asking about, you know, which woman's match would be placed on center because, you know, unlike the U.S. Open during its day session, they typically only have one women's match on at Wimbledon on center court during the day. They have two men's matches almost all the time otherwise. And it goes to Venus Williams against Anna Kanju, the number 10 against the number 27 seed. 27 seed is playing the 37-year-old player. And so, you know, Venus gets the placement on center, does not go to Konta, doesn't go to a pair of very strong WTA matches on number two court, which we'll get to in a bit. But Venus will kick things off against Kanju here. Kanju, you know, has done, I think, over the course of really the past year or so, still, you know, she's only 19 years old. She's barely half of Venus's age, but has actually played a fair amount of Grand Slam tennis really already. She was a quarterfinalist of the U.S. Open last year. This is her first fourth round at Wimbledon. She has made it past the first round at, you know, every slam. She actually won a round at Roland Garros each of the past 3 years. So, and she's had success here at Wimbledon as a junior as well. Actually, some double success. She was a runner-up in the girls' doubles in 2012. And goes against Venus, who, you know, as has been well documented, has obviously had a lot more on her mind besides just tennis coming into this week here. And, you know, what I'm thinking about this match here is I see, you know, for Kanju, there is really, you know, there's certainly nothing to lose for her at this point. It's, you know, and I think that does make it a potentially difficult match for Venus when you consider that. You know, I don't think Venus has been, from a strictly playing point, has been at her, you know, at her absolute best here at Wimbledon. I thought she actually started out stronger at the French with her play. But she did, you know, has only dropped one set thus far. Got by, you know, she just ended up playing a pretty young player, Naomi Osaka, and, you know, has another, you know, has the early contest on Monday, you know, against what I think will be, you know, a pretty formidable challenge, given what we've seen from Kanju, you know, this far and thus far and from in previous tournaments, previous Grand Slam tournaments. You move on, and it's Andy Murray and Roger Federer whose matches will fill out the rest of the center court schedule. Not a giant surprise there. Murray against Pair, Federer against Dimitrov. I think the Federer-Dimitrov match certainly, would be a little more sort of appealing if we had, you know, if the Grigor Dimitrov we saw at the Australian Open, who made the semis, had really kind of sustained that going forward after that. But I will say this about Dimitrov: I think he plays great on grass. He's obviously had some success here in the past as well. And you know, once again, it's a rare spot for Dimitrov in the fact that for all the expectation that was placed on him, and you know, still kind of dealing with some of that pressure, again, he is not going to have anything to lose against Federer in this match. You know, the crowd is all going to be for Federer. And given how Federer has looked thus far, certainly the talk of seeing Roger again, kind of, you know, saving up for these specific tournaments in each year looks like this in this particular season looks like, it was well thought out and, carefully considered. Before that with Murray and Pair, I don't sense Pair as hard as he hits. I don't see it happening against Murray. I think it's going to take a pretty strong effort to take out Murray at this particular Wimbledon. He's made his way to the second week. He has, I think the crowd support for Murray over the years, especially as he's won these tournaments, he's built up almost a bigger base because he's been able to prove himself. And I only mention that, it seems kind of obvious, but I think for a long time we were thinking about, Murray will have this huge rush of support because, no Brit had won Wimbledon. But when he did that in 2013 and did it again last year, I think the locals, are seeing that this is clearly a once in a generation, a lifetime player potentially in British tennis here. And I think, still number one in the world. He's got a lot going for him right now, in spite of this not being his most successful year to this point. For all that's happened to Murray before Wimbledon, he still has Wimbledon. And I don't think Pair is going to disrupt that for it, at least for this round. So you move on to number one court this is where Konta is. Certainly her against Garcia is a center court worthy match at this point, given Konta's obviously British ties. Garcia has really been playing well of late, especially also a lot of success from guys, with the exception of Stan Wawrinka. A lot of success from players who did well at Roland Garros going on to Wimbledon here. Ostapenko still in the draw. Rafa playing, very, very well. Halep, she's turned things around pretty nicely here at the All England Club. And Garcia, too. He had a nice little run at her home slam. And, again, I know this kind of is repeating myself a little bit here, but there are so many matchups where there is a clear-cut favorite and there's a very talented player that has nothing to lose, but plenty of game and plenty of ability to take advantage of that. Konta and Garcia is one example of that. Rafa and Jill Muller, the next match, is another example of that. Muller, there's a lot of mispronunciations here. I really do apologize for that. I mean no disrespect to any of the players or any fans by that. But this will be, I think we're going to see some tiebreakers in this one. A couple lefties too. And I think for Rafa, the first week was a necessary way to, build up his game on grass. and just to, you know, I think build, you know, reestablish kind of what he is capable of on at Wimbledon, and also just, you know, to continue what we've seen all this year on him on all surfaces. Muller is a guy who is, of course, going to serve quite big, and you know, Rafa's returning will be tested, but so will his ability to, you know, to take advantage of those points where he does get the ball back in play. And, you know, the rallies are going to be lopsided in Rafa's favor. It's just a matter of how good Moore can serve. And, you know, in his case, I think it's getting these sets to tiebreakers and, you know, let the chips fall where they may there. To close out number one court, Djokovic and Mannarino. Djokovic, he had a long interview on ESPN actually today after his win against Ernest Gulbis, a straight set victory. Thought that was a pretty encouraging sign for Novak. You know, again, we have not seen the best from Novak Djokovic, and I think that is one, you know, that's one point of caution that I would give people that are kind of playing down his chances. That he's gotten through this first week without too much difficulty, without anywhere near the game that has won him this tournament three times, and, you know, as recently as last year, you know, made him a clear-cut number one. So, you know, Djokovic, again, I think he gets a nice little play. He gets a nice draw here in Mannarino. Mannarino with sort of a good serve for grass as well. You know, hits flat, and you know, he'll be, again, going for his shots against Djokovic. Don't see, you know, I don't really see a path to victory for Mannarino, but, you know, again, has nothing to lose too at the same time. Let's move to number two court. And I, you know, I just realized obviously that typically in these tennis intents, we're looking back at the completed day of play. On Saturday, day six, not a lot in the way of upsets, certainly. But I think, you know, at this point, really want to kind of focus on where, you know, where the tournament stands, you know, with the day off and, you know, heading into what is hopefully going to be a memorable Monday. Maybe that's the, you know, the right adjective for it. Manic, it's just a little overdone. That's all I'm going to say about that one. So number two court, the reason this one goes on my poll, you know, that's a strong slate for center and number one. I feel pretty good for the people in the queue for both those courts that are probably there now. I think it was even reported on Wimbledon's Twitter that the queue is full for both center and number one for Monday. But if you are going to queue and get a grounds pass, which is, you know, also doable, I actually had dinner one evening over in London with someone who did that, and said it was actually, you know, a commitment, obviously, but not insurmountable or you know, something that can be done if you really want it. And you'd be rewarded if you get one, because you could hang out on number two court all day on Monday and see just a trove of good tennis here. You have Angelique Kerber, the world number one, against Garbiñe Muguruza, French Open champion, Wimbledon finalist. You have Victoria Azarenka, two-time Grand Slam champion, former number one, against Simona Halep, number two seed, French Open finalist just a couple weeks ago. You have Milos Raonic, defending runner-up at Wimbledon, against Alexander Zverev, certainly the best young player in the game, and the potential at both Wimbledon and the rankings is excessive. And sorry, not excessive. He has, you know, I think tremendous potential given his talents and what he's shown so far already on grass too, no less. He beat Federer last year in Halle actually, and you know, this is an exceptional slate to this point. Azarenka will start actually with the first match. Kerber Muguruza, that's 4-3 in favor of the Spaniard. They played actually five times in 2015. with Muguruza winning four of those matches. She has actually had a four-game winning streak against Kerber. They played at the French Open at Wimbledon, 7-6 with a 14-12 tiebreaker, 1-6-6-2. WTA finals as well. So they played on all surfaces, and some strange score lines, actually. Their match in Sydney, which admittedly is right at the start of the year, so you can't, I don't think you're getting the full examination of each player to that point, battle tested. 0-6, 6-1, 6-4. That went to Kerber. So, you know, their history, obviously siding right now with Muguruza. You know, Kerber today at Wimbledon goes the three-set distance with Shelby Rogers. She came back from 4-set and 4-2 or 4-1 down in the second set. Not a whole lot from Kerber from this first week that gives you the assurance that, you know, the number one player and actually last year's finalist is really ready to kind of, turn the season around a bit. And for Muguruza, I think going a bit under the radar, quite honestly, given what she's able to do on the turf here. I'm going to pick Muguruza in that one. I do think the Kerber clock is kind of ticking on her time at Wimbledon. This is a pretty tough draw for her, as a fourth round matchup. I did say before the tournament that the number 10 through 20, 11 through 20, the players in the world, they almost had as much potential as the number 1 through 10 seeds on the WTA. And this is a great example of that. Muguruza hasn't been able to build that ranking back up into, you know, the top 3, top 5, but, you know, is still able to really thrive in certain situations. And I think number 2 court will get a nice little debut match with those two. And then you move on to Azarenka and Halep, who have actually only played 3 times in their career, last time in 2015, and the only 2 times before that was in 2012. At the 2015 U.S. Open, a quarterfinal that went Halep's way, 6-3-4, 6-6-4. Azarenka won the other 2 matches in hard courts, pretty lopsided, but this is long before Halep really began to dedicate herself to singles and become the player that we know today. Azarenka, love what I've seen from her this first week. That's, I think, has got to be said. I think somewhat unexpected. I think she was, nearly out in the first round. She dropped the first set to CeCe Bellis, won that in, you know, 3, of course. But then, you know, afterwards takes out Vesnina last year, a semifinalist in Wimbledon, 6-3, 6-3, and then gets center court billing yesterday and defeats Heather Watts and the Brit there, 6-4 in the third. Azarenka, again, what does she have to lose, really, in a match like this against Halep, who is still going to be saddled with that number 2 ranking, the, you know, inability to have won a slam, and the scars of the French Open, really. She has played very well this week, not losing a set, and, you know, getting by Peng Shui 6-4, 7-6 in her last match. This is a tough call, I think you can come up with some reasons for both being kind of unable to, you know, get by the other in a spot like this. I do love the Azarenka, the Azarenka serve a little bit more in this match. This is not going to be a serving exhibition by any means. One of the better backhand battles, though, of the entire day between these two. Not an easy one to go by, which I think, again, plays up to where, you know, how number 2 court is shaping up in terms of just, you know, some really nice tennis coming up on Monday. And you close it out with Raonic against Zverev. One where I think we want to see, you know, from Alexander Zverev. I mean, is this maybe, is a match like this and is a Wimbledon like this one where, you know, maybe we are, again, going to kind of see the continued progress of him. He had a very nice, he hasn't lost a set yet. This is the farthest he has gone at a Grand Slam tournament, so there's that to consider. And Raonic obviously has plenty of success on this surface and, of course, on grass, given his serve. He has won one, two, three, four tiebreakers this week, only lost one set. So I think both these two coming into this on good rolls, and it is tough to pick against Raonic on grass here for sure. His health was a bit of a concern coming into Wimbledon, and you know, this would be one of the most impressive wins of Zverev's career, maybe the most impressive. I think it's probably, you know, top three, top five matches of his career to this point. So I think it's curious to see how he handles that moment as well. You know, I think both guys have something to lose. I think this one goes against the trend that I've been mentioning earlier, you know, given the dynamics of each player in this match here. Let's, you know, with that said, let's kind of move on just to, I want to just kind of quickly run down the other three courts that will have singles matches, main draw, of course, on them. So number three court is a pretty nice one too. Radwanska, you know, this court honestly could be the most competitive, even above the other two that I mentioned. Number three court is a great court as well to watch. If you ever do get to Wimbledon, I can tell you from experience there, that's a really nice one, accessible to grounds pass holders as well. Agnieszka Radwanska, who defeated Baczynski today in three sets, gets Svetlana Kuznetsova. Coco Vandeweghe has not dropped a set. Cover subject of this latest tennis magazine, which I suggest you check out. We have features actually on Vandeweghe and Raonic, very timely. And she'll face Caroline Wozniacki, who number five seed, you know, just continuing to, you know, keep going with this later career renaissance. And, you know, her against Vandeweghe, obviously such a contrast of styles. I should have said, you know, a little bit about Radwanska and Kuznetsova. I think that has three sets written all over it and maybe beyond. Both of those two, Kuznetsova, especially at the Slams, have had much experience going beyond 6-6. I just like both of those players' games on grass. I do like Vandeweghe in the Wozniacki match. She'll be... You know, Vandeweghe will get frustrated in this one. There's no doubt about that, given what Wozniacki will throw at her in terms of counterpunching. I think a lot of this, as much as it depends on Vandeweghe's serve, it depends on her return too. She needs to attack the Wozniacki serve and sort of really assuming control of those points right away, even when returning. And it closes with Dominic Thiem against Thomas Berdych. Berdych, you know, still, I mean... doesn't get more under the radar than him at number 11, going against Thiem. Berdych, a finalist here in the past. Thiem, again, sort of like Zverev in a way, kind of waiting for that one big breakthrough, and that match will close at number 3. You move to court 12, which I was on a couple days ago for Isner against Saleh. So a, you know, sort of a tidier side court in a way. Again, very strong matches. Ostapenko against Svitolina on court 12. French Open champion against the number 4 seed. I think could be one of the day's best matches. It'll be right when play starts at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time, 11:30 local. You know, that's really, really a very strong match to start that day. Love what I've seen from Ostapenko so far. And Svitolina, you know, again, scars from Roland Garros. I mean, she had you know, a ticket to the Final Four all but punched there. And, you know, unable to do so, but we'll get a nice chance to redeem this second week in Wimbledon. Batista, Gut, and Cilic. That one is you know, exiled over here, if you will. You know, not one of the matches from sort of a buzz or sexiest point of view that's going to move the needle. But, you know, I've said it on a few of these podcasts. I'm going to keep saying it. Marin Cilic was my pick and still is my pick. Rafa's making me really think about this, but to win Wimbledon. And I believe they actually will meet if they do, if they advance. I could be wrong on that. I need to check the double check the draw, but I'm going Cilic here against Batista Gut. Love the way he's played this far. And the last two singles matches on memorable Monday, as it were. Magdalena Rybarikova against Petra Martic on court 18, and Sam Querrey against Kevin Anderson. So with Rybarikova, what I implore you to do is to check out Steve Tigner's really smart piece on her game, her you know, why it's catered to Wimbledon, why it's a throwback game, and as a result of her run to this point, you know, I think a fresh look at why a wide open women's draw, which I know it's cliched and I know it kind of can, you know, in a way sort of play down the what's going on the WTA tour at the moment, but it is a wide open draw. I mean, there are many possible winners you could definitely conceive of. You know, the case can even be taken down to Rybarikova. I think, you know, given what we've seen from her, I like, kind of like her as well in this one to open court 18. And Querrey versus Anderson, you know, this kind of has that, you know, two huge servers, kind of has that Isner Mahut type feel. It's on court 18 too, American player. Anderson again, you know, certainly not someone who would be your typical unseeded player at Wimbledon. Querrey, you know, still erratic, but on grass, certainly a lot more consistent. Has, you know, has really played his way into a pretty solid area, this top, you know, top 25, top 30 level, and he's been there for quite a long time. I think his sort of, you know, endurance and durability in this area is a bit overlooked. You know, I did write a little bit about Isner this week while I was over at Wimbledon, actually back in the States now. You know, I think given where U.S. tennis was, you know, after, you know, obviously some all-time greats in the 90s and early 2000s and Roddick, you know, midway through this past decade here, I think, you know, sort of by no fault, by fault of their own, Isner and Querrey have really taken, you know, I think some unfortunate sort of flack by fans and in the media. This should be celebrated for Querrey, especially after he defeated Djokovic here last year at Wimbledon, to come back a year later and put this forth. And I think both of these two have to really, you know, have to really like this matchup. Fourth round, you get, you know, Querrey gets an unseeded player. It's still a tough player, but it's, you know, the alternatives are much, much more, you know, treacherous. And you know, Anderson too. I mean, you know, not too far away from reaching a quarterfinal at Wimbledon. You know, I think he has to like that. I'll go Querrey here though. But we'll see what happens. And that, you know, those are the 16. Those are your 16 singles matches. Unless I, you know, somehow happen to miss one here, but I, you know, they're all of course put on, you know, the best courts at Wimbledon. It's, you know, it's really one of tennis's great days. So no matter where you are in the world, I certainly suggest you tune in, enjoy what should be a great day of tennis. And when it's all through, we will come back, you know, and, dissect it right here on what will be back to a 10-minute podcast. Made up for your two missed podcasts. We're about tennis in 30 right now. And with that, I will sign off. This is Ed McGrogan. Back in the U.S., still fighting off a little bit of a heavy travel, but a great time at Wimbledon, and I look forward to watching on TV with all of you. Talk soon. Thank you for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.